The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey folks, I challenge you to think of at least one thing you no longer do that you wish you could. Do you miss like playing golf, maybe long walks with your spouse, sleeping through the night? Are you ready to start living without pain? My colleagues and friends, Hugh Hewitt, Dennis Prager, Mike Gallagher, have been talking about their own successful experience with Relief Factor, and you can add Eric Metaxas to that list. Relief Factor is changing the lives of tens of thousands of Salem radio listeners by reducing and even eliminating daily aches and pains. ReliefFactor.com is full of great success stories, and now I am on board. For just $19.95, Relief Factor is offering a three-week quick start that could help you live your life with little to no pain. Go to ReliefFactor.com to see testimonials from folks all over the country. I love reading them. Over 70% of those that try Relief Factor continue as a customer. Feel the relief and get back your independence and freedom from the aches and pains of everyday life. Go to ReliefFactor.com. Read the testimonies. I tell all my relatives to take it. ReliefFactor.com.
Once upon a time in Radioland, a towering man strode to a silver microphone and announced to the world these words.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I am that announcer, and my name is Todd Wilkerson, and this is the show I announce.
I'm announcing it right now, in fact.
And you have a front row seat to history.
Here's Eric.
Thanks, Todd. You know, folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I have Todd as my announcer because In comparison to him, I seem much less pompous, and that's really why we hired him. I get to talk to wonderful people on this program. Today is no exception. I get to talk about fun topics. Today is no exception. I'm sitting here in the studio with a distinguished professor of history from Baylor University, whose work I have enjoyed in the past. His name is Dr. Thomas S. Kid with two D's. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Your new book, which is out right now, America's Religious History,
right.
Faith, Politics, and the Shaping of a Nation, published by Zondervan, whom I love. And I don't just say that because they are also my publisher, but Zondervan published this book, America's Religious History. But I've recently been enjoying your biography, 2014, I think, on Whitfield.
Yes.
I talk about Whitfield a lot, and I think of you a lot because I use that book. In fact, the book I'm working on for Zondervan right now is called Seven More Men. Actually, it's done. And one of the great figures in there is George Whitfield. And as I said, a lot of people, when they think of George Whitfield, they think of Thomas Kidd because you wrote what I consider the definitive biography, just came out 5 years ago now. Mm-hmm. Seems like two minutes ago. So, but your new book is titled America's Religious History, Faith, Politics, and the Shaping of a Nation. What exactly is the big idea, before we get down into the weeds? What's the big idea behind this narrative?
Well, I think that so many of the debates about religion's role in American history have to do, you know, is America a Christian nation or is it a secular nation? And I'm trying, in a way, to give a kind of a third option where religion has been vital in America, a lot of different kinds of religion, mostly Christianity, but a lot of different kinds of religion. And it's America's very strength in religion that has made religious conflict so prevalent in American history. And it's not just today. I mean, we know about religious conflict today, but it started at the very beginning of American history, that religion was an item of constant conflict and sometimes really ugly violence. But it's a byproduct of religion's strength in American history.
Well, it's interesting because you cannot talk about America without talking about religion.
That's right.
There would be no America, at least that's my thesis, without religion. You cannot have the idea of America without religion. Religion is inextricably intertwined with who we are as a people, with the way we see self-government and freedom. And when you say, you know, we have a history of faith— and not just Christianity. What I find most interesting, and this will get us deeper into the subject, is that when we talk about Christianity in America, we're talking about all kinds of Christianity.
Oh, yes.
It's an amazing story of how many different kinds of Christians there were here, and then how they had to fight and debate and come to terms among themselves about how to move forward. And of course, that leads us to religious liberty. But that, to me, is the central idea of America, is that we were the first place where you could have a free market of religious ideas competing.
Right. And that was not easily won, to have a free market. I mean, there were so many of these religious groups that came who still believed there should be an official state denomination. The Church of England believed that. The Puritans believed that. And so they would still crack down on all kinds of religious dissenters. Quakers, Massachusetts made it illegal to be a Baptist in the 1640s. I mean,
yeah.
You know, groups that you think are pretty mainstream now, they were making illegal and cracking down
and
on them.
But today, Massachusetts has decriminalized it. They just heavily frown upon it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And so it was those dissenters, often evangelical Christians, who were crying out for religious liberty against the official state denominations and saying, just let us preach the gospel in freedom and we'll win the day. And that's where that free market ideal of religion comes from.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we have to go back a little bit, since you're a history professor and a distinguished history professor at Baylor. Help us understand how we got to a place where you have in America today, we have genuine religious liberty. But speaking sloppily, as I always do, and I'm sometimes forced to do, you know, I say that that kind of religious liberty simply didn't exist before the United States of America, roughly speaking, because in my book on Luther, you know, you look at somebody like Luther, who we think of him as, you know, he sort of kicks things off. And yet he was as harsh to his ideological opponents, theological opponents, as the Catholics ever were to him and his friends. And you see that pattern for the next couple of centuries until you get to America.
Yeah, I think that it has a lot to do with what happened in the Great Awakening in the mid-1700s, that it just created, the Awakening created just such an enormous groundswell of evangelical movements who often were not associated with the state churches and were pushing back against the state churches.
Is that
churches.
The first time that kind of phenomenon ever happened? I mean, the idea of, you say, an evangelical movement, it seems to me that was the first time that really ever happened in history.
Yeah, I mean, of course, evangelicals, the first evangelicals would say that they were just going back to what the Bible taught and what the first disciples were doing. But it does seem like with the coming of Whitfield in the 1740s, and I talk about this in the new book for sure, that there's a new movement going on that is that more kind of free market oriented, and just, I mean, even Whitfield's ministry of preaching outside, not even within a church building. I mean, there's something new and dynamic and revolutionary.
It hadn't been done since like the first century.
Not often, that's for sure. And so those new dissenters are pushing back against the laws banning dissent, banning unauthorized preaching, and so forth. And then people like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison sort of latch on to what they see happening on the ground, and they say, you know, they've got these Enlightenment theories about religious liberty, but then they see in practice that these dissenters are pushing and clamoring for freedom to preach their gospel. And of course, Jefferson and Madison weren't necessarily in sync with these people, but they said they're just regular Christians. They should be able to preach the gospel in freedom, and we need to get the government out of the business of policing people's beliefs.
Well, look, that makes so much sense to us today, but thinking, you know, in the 18th century, this was obviously a radical new idea.
Yes.
When you say Enlightenment ideas about religious liberty, what do you mean by Enlightenment ideas? What were the Enlightenment ideas about religious liberty?
Right.
Where did they come from?
Well, it's coming from people like John Locke in England who say, you know, we've had two centuries of conflict between nations about the outcome of the Protestant Reformation, and we're tired of it. And couldn't we just agree to stop persecuting at least other Protestants? I mean, Catholics was another question, but at least other Protestants. And the people who believed in a state church said, no, the state has to back up religion. It needs to support religion because religion is essential to the life of the state, which that also kind of makes sense. But that's where they – so that's the great debate about is it better for religion to give full liberty or to get the state behind a preferred denomination and to financially support it?
Well, and Knox was a Presbyterian. But did any of that thinking influence the kind of Presbyterian he was? It's just interesting to me. How do you stay firm in a denomination at the same time that you're saying other denominations are okay? Again, that would be the first time in history, really, somebody would say a thing like that.
Right. Well, I mean, even the Church of Scotland became and still is the official denomination in Scotland. So I think that, you know, Knox has those kind of establishment tendencies.
Yeah.
Luther did, as you said, Calvin did. And so I do think that in America there's a substantially new contribution to the idea that you could have thriving religion without a state church.
It's a big new idea. I want to continue my conversation with Thomas Kidd. The book is America's Religious History. Stick around.
Yes, I do.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. As you know, following Christ is a lifelong pursuit. It requires perseverance, and practice makes permanent. A new study Bible for today is the third edition of the Life Application Study Bible. Read by more than 20 million people, it's the best-selling study Bible in the world. The Life Application Study Bible is not a Bible for a season. It's not for a New Year's resolution. It's not just for hard times. It's a Bible for all times, with more than 10,000 newly updated and expanded notes, charts, maps, timelines, profiles, and more. The Life Application Study Bible is the most complete single-volume Bible ever compiled. It is just what you need to apply biblical teaching to your everyday life. As you train for the race God calls each of us to, the Life Application Study Bible is the companion and coach you need by your side every single step of the way. For who you were, who you are, and who God has called you to become for all times, learn more at lifeapplication.com. That's lifeapplication.com.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started. HomeAdvisor.
Hi, I'm Karen, owner of Lone Star Transfer. If you are a timeshare owner, getting out is probably a top priority. And now that the annual maintenance fees are right around the corner, this ongoing burden and expense is at the top of your list. Let us do for you what we have done for thousands of others. Our process is done legally, ethically, and quickly. Don't let another day go by with maintenance fees taking your hard-earned money. Give us a call for a no-obligation consultation at 844-284-4863 or online at LoneStarTransfer.com.
So there's this guy named Jordan, and he's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. But then he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched from medical insurance to MediShare, which is a Christian healthcare sharing ministry. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this really going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. If you want to find out more, here's a number for you. 844-45-BIBLE. That's 844-45-BIBLE. 844-45-BIBLE.
How was the doctor?
Not what I expected. I have arthritis.
What? How can I help? Well, the doctor gave me a rundown on what to know and what to do, and also mentioned a symptom tracking app called Arthritis Power. It can help me and the doc manage my arthritis better.
Well, great. Let's download it from the App Store. Arthritis Power?
Yep, it sounds easy. I just have to answer questions about my pain and other symptoms once a week. It only takes a few minutes. The doctor says that seeing my symptoms over time in this app can help us understand how my arthritis is responding to treatment.
That's cool. Now don't forget to use it, old man. You'll be helping yourself and your doctor.
Old man? And what does that make you then?
If you have arthritis, download Arthritis Power. Arthritis Power is from the nonprofit Global Healthy Living Foundation and its patient community, Creaky Joints. Your information is protected, and there's never a cost. In fact, you could even be paid for participating in research surveys about arthritis. For more information, go to arthritispower.org or search for Arthritis Power in your app store.
Folks, this is Eric Metaxas Show. I am talking about America's religious history with the author of a brand new book titled America's Religious History, Faith, Politics, and the Shaping of a Nation. His name is Thomas Kidd, Dr. Thomas Kidd from Baylor. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
We're talking about things that are of such deep interest to me. You were just talking about the founders and their new view. In a sense, it seems to me that there's a parallel to what happens with Emperor Charles V, where you start realizing, or he realizes, that I just don't have the manpower, I don't have the energy to enforce this idea that everyone must be a Catholic within the Holy Roman Empire. So we're gonna let some of these Lutheran Protestant territories go. Fine, we're not gonna fight every battle because we can't. And it seems to me that kind of practical thinking informed some of the founders. The way you talk about Knox, that he sort of thought, like, at some point, these are not battles worth fighting.
Right, and I think that the American Revolution is a key moment with this, where you're trying to retain the allegiance of the American people to support the revolution. And so you see, again, in Virginia, the Baptists were very clever about how they handled this. I mean, they said, oh, you want us to be patriots? How about you stop persecuting us and, for instance, give us Baptist chaplains, which was illegal before that point. You had to be Church of England if you wanted to be a chaplain.
You mean it during the war?
Yeah, in 1775, 76. And so the state started making all these concessions to the Baptists for religious liberty purpose in order to maintain unity of the patriot cause. So I definitely think that there's that sort of pragmatic desire to grant religious liberty.
Well, yeah. I mean, pragmatism is interesting because obviously pragmatism can sometimes be cynical, or sometimes it can lead us to a greater truth. And
right.
It seems to me that it forced us as a people to figure out what we really believed.
Yes.
And I think that we were willing to let certain theological points go in favor of agreeing on a larger theological point, which, when you talk about Whitfield, I mean, we weren't prepared to allow imams or rabbis become chaplains, but we were prepared to say, okay, we'll go, you know, to another Protestant denomination. How far did religious pluralism go in the colonial era?
Well, and the revolution, again, is a turning point because they actually allowed Catholic chaplains, which was shocking to a lot of people.
Yes.
at the time. But they wanted to retain the allegiance of Catholics in America, even though there weren't that many in 1776.
I didn't know that. I love learning these things. So that's the first time that we were willing to let that happen. And it's a huge concession.
It's a huge concession. Locke had said you shouldn't tolerate Catholics because they're not loyal. They're loyal to the Pope.
And although in those days, technically that was quite true. In other words, today it's not, because we have some theological concessions from the Vatican. But at that time, until fairly recently, That was mostly true.
Well, and it's all in the context that Britain, Imperial Britain, had been at war with France or Spain almost constantly for 100 years before the American Revolution. And so you're really worried about the allegiances of Catholics. But then you get to the Revolution, and they allow Catholic chaplains. And there really was a debate about what you do even with non-Christians. There are some radical Baptists, for instance, who say that religious liberty should extend to Muslims. Now, I mean, there's almost no Muslims in America in 1776. So yeah. What practically that meant would mean came a lot later. But I mean, there were even people who would bring up the idea of extending religious liberty, certainly to Jews.
Right.
George Washington brought that up.
Well, I was going to say the Truro Synagogue. I mean, that's a staggering thing, too, to think that we're in the 18th century.
Yeah.
And we have this man who was himself a Christian, nonetheless able to concede that Jews should be able to worship as Jews freely. I mean, you talk about somebody who's ahead of his time.
Yeah.
Just going back to this idea of Catholics and Protestants, it seems to me, and please correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seems to me that the idea of religious pluralism and religious liberty is foundationally a Protestant idea. In other words, it seems to me that you could make a case that the Catholic Church, and really any church before you find the kind of religious liberty we had in this country, that they did want a so-called, something like a theocracy. In other words, they believed that the state and the church had to be wedded in that way, in the same way that a caliphate would, you know, somehow concretize the faith of the people there. And nobody had ever thought past that, but it was the Protestants who first thought past it.
Yeah, I there are a lot of Protestants who still believed in a state church in 1776.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And I think when you look down the list of the founding fathers, they're about half and half about whether they thought the state should keep an official denomination. People like John Adams supported it.
And when you say state, you mean each of the 13 colonies that became states, or do you mean the federal state?
The states, not the national government.
Okay.
And so, for instance, Massachusetts had an official denomination until 1833, long after the adoption of the First Amendment.
And what was that?
It was the Congregationalist Church, the old Church of the Puritans. And so they thought, we'll keep doing this on the state level, just as we've always done.
Right.
But as far as the nation, it's too pluralistic. To have a national denomination.
So it's kind of like a Charles V, you know, going back to Luther, where he says, look, I can't enforce Catholicism across the empire, so we will let certain principalities like Saxony, they can be Lutherans and we won't bother them. But we will bother people within our jurisdiction in these other places. So how would, for example, Massachusetts until 1833, how would they enforce Congregationalism, so to speak? In other words, how would they persecute people who were not members of the Congregational Church but nonetheless were residents of Massachusetts?
Well, it was different from state to state, of course, but some of it was a positive relationship with churches where the Congregationalist Church would get funding that other churches couldn't get access to for church buildings and for ministers' salaries and so forth. There were ongoing attempts into the 1780s, 1790s to keep persecuting dissenters, but that was so hard to maintain after the Revolution that most of that faded away, at least for Protestant dissenters. So,
persecuting them in what way? Driving them out of the state?
Forcing them to pay taxes to support the established church.
So isn't that kind of like, you know, what the Muslims call dimitude, sort of a second-class citizenship?
Yeah, well, that's certainly what groups like the Baptists said. They said, why should we pay taxes to support the Congregationalist Church? Obviously, we don't go there. We have our own church
because
that we'd like to financially.
Because you're a second-class citizen.
Right, that's right. And so that's a mode where they're sort of tolerated, but there's not full religious freedom. But the states, most of the states also had theological tests for office holders. They had to affirm the inspiration of the Bible or maybe the Trinity or something like that. So that's another, that's not a denominational establishment, right. But it is a theological kind of test or establishment, right. Where the Constitution, of course, says no religious test shall be required for office
holders. But what they mean by religious test, of course, is quite different than what we might mean by religious test, right?
Well, it's a religious test in that when you're swearing in for office, you have to affirm the whatever's on their list. You have to affirm the inspiration of the Bible or the
right.
Trinity
but that's what's so fascinating to me is that we had religious tests. What they meant by religious test means that if you're a Congregationalist or anything, you could be a cultural Muslim. But if you're willing to assent to these ideas, we'll let it go. But they did. They did, in fact, have a religious test. They simply didn't have a denominationalist kind of test.
Sure. Yes. And there, it was widely assumed that you wouldn't want, for instance, an atheist serving in office.
Right.
That would just be a disaster to have someone like that. Because there's almost no atheists in America in 1776 either. But they felt like we need to. And many of them would have said you can't have Jews or Muslims or, you know, non-Trinitarian Christians serving in office either.
And is that necessarily a crazy idea? In other words, when you talk about somebody like Whitfield coming in, I mean, he ushers in what we think of as religious liberty, but it comes out of a deeper fidelity to the basics of the Christian faith, what we would call, you know, an evangelical consensus, I guess, which really didn't exist before that. Is it crazy to think that there are limits to religious liberty?
Oh, no. I mean, the founders would have assumed, I mean, there's always limits to religious liberty. And so if you say my faith requires me to commit criminal acts, that's not going to work.
Right.
And so,
what about smoking weed in Colorado? I'm a Rastafarian. All right, we're going to have to go to a break. We'll be right back. We're talking to Thomas Kidd, the new book, America's Religious History, Faith, Politics, and the Shaping of a Nation.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. President Trump is defending his decision to pull back U.S. troops from northeastern Syria. The president tweeting that going into the Middle East is the worst decision ever made in the history of our country. Meanwhile, the attack is underway. Turkey's state-run news agency says Turkish artillery units are shelling suspected Syrian Kurdish forces targets across the border in the Syrian town of Tal Abyad. Some 800,000 homes and businesses in 34 northern, central, and coastal California counties will be without electricity for days. Pacific Gas and Electric says it's shutting off their power to reduce the chance of strong winds knocking down or toppling trees into power lines during a siege of hot, dry, gusty weather. And the Labor Department says U.S. job openings fell 1.7% during the month of August. The Dow is ahead 200 points. This is SRN News.
The following is a true story.
I had a lady that was in her mid-70s, and I'd sold her timeshare, and that was the lowest I'd ever felt in my life. I knew then that I had to do something to simply not to go to hell for selling timeshare.
Chuck McDowell founded Wesley Financial Group to help folks cancel their timeshares permanently.
Called her and everybody that I'd sold timeshare to, and I said, this is what I said to you that was a lie, and this is what you need to do to cancel your timeshare. From that point, people started referring friends to me to help them cancel the timeshare, and that's how it all started. I fought the world's largest timeshare company in federal court. If I had lost that lawsuit, there would be no one helping people that have been lied to when they bought timeshare. If we take you as a client, we will cancel your timeshare or we'll give your money back. That's what makes us different.
Call Wesley Financial Group now for a free information kit. 800-601-5050. That's 800-601-5050. 800-601-5050.
Hey, Mike, how's the house coming along?
Needs a ton of work. The pipes are leaking. Needs a new roof. The AC just broke. I just don't have time to do it all myself. You know anyone?
Oh, just ask Home Advisor. They match you with the best local pros for any home project.
Cool.
Yeah, you can read reviews and book appointments online.
What's it cost?
Actually, Home Advisor is always free to use.
Nice. I'll check it out.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app.
Home Advisor.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and we just launched a new Pragertopia membership called Pragertopia Unlimited. Members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store. That's over 400 programs to choose from. Show segments, talks, lectures, courses, even full access to all 5 books of my Torah teaching. For a limited time, an annual Pragertopia Unlimited membership is only $119. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.com.
Taxi show. I'm talking to Thomas Kidd with two D's. No relation to the captain, or is there a relation?
There may be a distant relation.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Holy cow. I would never have had you on if I'd known that. The book is America's Religious History, Faith, Politics, and the Shaping of a Nation. Now, ostensibly, this would make a spectacular, and will make a spectacular textbook, which I assume you'll use in your own course on American religious history.
Sure, yes.
But it would make a good book just to read as well.
Oh, obviously. For sure. And I think it's especially for anybody who wants a kind of an updated view of what role that America. I mean, because so much has changed even in the past 20 years about the dynamics in American life. I mean, being passed. You know, the gay marriage Supreme Court decision and so forth.
That's a huge one, and I did want to bring that up, so let's talk about that now. I almost daily wince at the ignorance of elected officials, sometimes senators like Senator Weinstein, with regard to religious liberty, one of the most fundamental, almost the most fundamental liberty in America. And it seems that there is a new religion that is becoming established. It's kind of this new sexuality that has bowed to the LGBTQ lobby that says we can and we will enforce a view of human sexuality and the human person that is different than some of you who are people of faith believe, including Muslims, Syrian Jews, conservative Christians and Catholics, Protestants. That's new, and I never thought I'd live to see the day that our leaders would be ignorant of this, or maybe not ignorant, but somehow hostile to it, and finally showing their true colors with regard to that hostility.
Yeah. I think there is a real risk of that code of belief functioning as a kind of new establishment, and so I think it's important to remember that the founder's vision is that if you're not going to have an official national or state denomination, that you've also got to guarantee free exercise, which is, as you know, a lot of times people on the left now want to restrict that to freedom of worship. But they have
that in China. We don't really need freedom of worship.
Yeah. They don't have freedom of assembly, but it's
this idea that you can go into that building and do your little weird rites, but when you come out, you better bow to the authority of the state, which is increasingly secular and increasingly hostile to basic biblical beliefs.
Right. And so I think it's important to maximize both sides of the equation. I mean, I don't want an official state church. I would like the government to stay out of my faith.
But wouldn't you say that comes out of your Christianity? You know, there's an irony there.
Of course.
That if you are a serious Christian, as both of us claim to be, we believe in religious liberty. But more and more you have people on the secular side or on the side of some hostility to Christianity that ironically are in fact the ones wanting to enforce something that pushes against religious liberty.
Right. And it's intensely, the left is intensely moralistic. Just for often a different set of moral values than what traditional Christians have always believed, and Jews and Muslims when it comes to the issue of marriage.
Yeah.
And so I think that we've got to balance both sides of no established religion, but full free exercise of religion and not disadvantaging people of faith for their beliefs.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's the irony. In other words, the reigning narrative is that the people being persecuted or disadvantaged would be people on the side that is opposed to basic Christian values. But the reality today is quite different.
It sure is, and there was a lot of things that I think the founding fathers could just take for granted. I mean, they thought, well, we can afford not to have an official national denomination because it's just a given that Christian morality will be undergirding American law and mores and so forth. You certainly can't take that for granted today.
Well, that's what's so crazy to me. It's why I want to turn the conversation to George Whitefield. He was the one, he didn't do it intentionally. It seems quite clear to me that he was used by God to bring into the colonies, and of course it carried over into the new country, an idea about faith that was absolutely new on the world stage. Talk to us about how that happened in the life of Whitefield, that he came to be espousing this new view of things, and why he himself didn't think of why he didn't think of himself as heretical in doing that.
Right. Well, he had a dramatic conversion experience at Oxford in the 1730s, and he was already a very talented public speaker and actor. He really enjoyed acting as a teenager, and then he began to employ those talents to preaching, and he just immediately started attracting huge crowds. Couldn't be contained by the church buildings at the time. It wasn't too long before he's drawing crowds reportedly in 60, 70, 80,000 people.
I've never heard those numbers in London. I've heard 30,000.
Yeah, those were the reports. And, of course, this is pre-amplification and so forth. So, he really became an overnight sensation. One of the things that I think is new is certainly that kind of direct appeal to the people out of doors, voluntary kind of quality to this revivalist movement. But then I also think, especially in America, he was an innovator in cooperating with people across denominations.
Let's pause there. We'll be right back to continue the conversation about Whitefield and American religious history with the author of the book American Religious History, Thomas Kidd. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I was thinking about Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. There's something you all need to know about Relief Factor and about Pete and Seth Talbot, the father and son owners. As you know, they're on a real mission to help as many people as possible get out of pain, and they've been a consistent sponsor of the show for several years. In radio, sponsors come and go. They may even stay for a year or so. It sounds like they're doing super, and then they're gone. Well, not so with Relief Factor. Pete and Seth are consistent year after year, and that's because tens of thousands of people are now taking Relief Factor every day for their back and neck pain. I'm one of them. Shoulder pain, knee pain, hip pain. And they are now in less or no pain at all. All these people, it's as simple as that. It works. That's why I've joined Pete and Seth on their mission to help you get out of pain today. And the first step is to order the 3-week quick start pack for $19.95. If you're still skeptical, remember, it's not just me. There are tens of thousands of other nice people who would happily tell you to give it a try. It can be done. It could be at your door in just 2 to 3 days. Go to relieffactor.com. Remember, relieffactor.com. It works. It works.
Hi, this is Dennis Prager, and we just launched a new Pragertopia membership called Pragertopia Unlimited. Members can listen to any and all audio programs that are in the Dennis Prager store. That's over 400 programs to choose from. Show segments, talks, lectures, courses, even full access to all 5 books of my Torah teaching. For a limited time, an annual Pragertopia Unlimited membership is only $119. Join Pragertopia Unlimited today. Go to Pragertopia.com.
I'm pretty handy around the house, but now that I have kids, I don't want to spend my Saturday installing a toilet or fixing an air conditioner. But thankfully, there's HomeAdvisor. HomeAdvisor helps me find the best home pros in my area to handle any kind of project. You can read reviews of the pros, check their availability, and even book appointments online. And what my wife loves most is that HomeAdvisor is completely free to use.
Go to HomeAdvisor.com or download the free app to get started. HomeAdvisor.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance.
Most people in today's economy are taking a roller coaster ride with their investments. With Vantage Point Software, you can remove that dynamic from your investment strategy once and for all. Vantage Point has spent the last 3 decades perfecting an artificial intelligence process that you can put to use today to take advantage of market fluctuations and make money no matter which way the market moves. Vantage Point Software analyzes massive quantities of data all around the world in seconds, so you get the information you need to make the right decisions to optimize your profits. Vantage Point is making its exclusive market forecast process available to you for free when you text MONEY to 411-411. That's M-O-N-E-Y to 411-411. We'll send you a link to your free market forecast so you take back control of your financial future. Text MONEY to 411-411.
Go to VantagePointSoftware.com for terms, conditions, and privacy policy.
Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. You have all helped build MyPillow into the amazing company it is today. Now Mike Lindell, the inventor and CEO of MyPillow, wants to give back to you, my listeners. You can get deep discounts on all MyPillow products if you go to MyPillow.com right now and click on the new radio listener specials. You know I use it. I rave about it. You can get deep discounts on MyPillow's mattress toppers. I love that. Bed sheets, so much more. For example, they're bringing back the buy one, get one free offer for the MyPillows. That's right. Buy one MyPillow, get another one absolutely free. Now, remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the new radio listener special so you can get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the buy one, get one free offer for the MyPillows. You've got to enter the promo code ERIC or Metaxas. That's the key. Eric or Metaxas, 800-978-3057, 800-978-3057. Hey folks, this is Eric from Taxes Show talking to Thomas Kidd about his new book, America's Religious History, and we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, George Whitefield. Thomas, you know, you talk about the realities of that era. In other words, suddenly crowds are showing up, and it's interesting to me how history and ideas and doctrines are shaped by these historical forces. I mean, the idea that you have people coming out to hear an evangelist in an era when there was no such thing. It's hard for us to imagine because it seems to me that Whitefield creates the idea of mass evangelism, creates the idea of being born again and being an evangelical, born-again Christian, that idea just didn't exist before him, and there was a huge appeal and that the authorities simply didn't know what to do with it, so they sort of had to let it ride, even though they tried to persecute him.
Yeah, and I mean, the Church of England people were very nervous about him because he was an Anglican Church of England minister.
He never left that, right?
He never left it, but he pretty much wouldn't cooperate with the rules, you know, and so they would try to constrain him and so forth, and he just wouldn't go along with it. In America, he found that many of his most avid supporters were not Anglicans, Baptists, Presbyterians, Congregationalists. And so that's a new thing that he learns, I think, primarily in America, is this kind of interdenominational evangelical movement that's focused especially on conversion and being born again.
Did that in any way precede him, or did he really introduce that?
Well, I mean, he would say that Jesus had introduced it. When he, you know, if you want to see the kingdom of heaven, you must be born again.
Well, no, I mean, I know what he would have said, but I'm saying that when he shows up, and people are open to this. In other words, it's interesting to me that you have them jumping onto this narrative that he puts out there, that you must be born again, there's no king but Jesus. But in other words, that he sort of shuffles some categories and says, this is what we must focus on. And I guess what I'm wondering is, was there some kind of religious pluralism here that preceded him that made that easy, or that made that? I'm just kind of wondering what it might have been like for him early on, because people seem to respond just instantly.
Yes, and I think that there are some precedents in the Reformation. I mean, Luther has, as you well know, has something like this kind of role, but not the public sort of groundswell of thousands and thousands of people coming to hear him at once, and so forth. So maybe Whitfield is fulfilling some possibilities that were there in the Reformation, but there's new possibilities that Whitfield maximizes in the print trade, I think, that creates this sensation.
Yeah.
Most notably through the assistance of Ben Franklin, who was not an evangelical Christian, but who was very happy to make money off of Whitfield. And so,
well, I mean, that's part of it, obviously, is true. But the other part of it is that I think Franklin saw something which was simply correct. In other words, I think that Franklin saw that when people got religion, or when people got serious about their faith, when they weren't just showing up because this is what we do on Sundays, but when they right. got serious and revival struck and people were suddenly deeply motivated along the lines of this newfound faith, he saw that, you know, crime went down, the ability to govern oneself went up. In other words, it was good for the whole of society. So he was a huge fan of it, and obviously he builds that building in Philadelphia where anybody can preach anything. He really believes that this is simply good for everyone, and he thinks that if I'm going to puff Whitfield, you know, the way Hearst said it, let's puff, you know, Billy Graham, like it's just going to be good for everybody.
I think that's right, and I think that Franklin also, in spite of their religious differences, became quite fond of Whitfield, and that they were very close friends, and even after Whitfield died, Franklin wrote just privately about how much he respected Whitfield. So, I think there was a personal fondness there, but there was also, Franklin is supportive of the movement, but Franklin would also print stuff against Whitfield too. So, I mean, he was willing to print it all.
I guess I came to the conclusion in part from reading your great biography of Whitfield that Whitfield enabled the founders to see the value of religion in self-government. In other words, that unless you have a virtuous and moral populace, which you do when you get revivals, you know, springing up all through the colonies, unless you have that, you don't really have a people that can govern themselves.
Right. And whether it was from Whitfield or just the Christian tradition generally, they assumed that if you're going to have a republic, that you have to have a virtuous people. And for most people, they thought virtue comes from religion.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even if it's a civil religion, the way they had in Rome or Greece, that's some kind of a fealty to a higher authority, an authority outside of oneself. To go back to the crowds that followed Whitfield and made him a gigantic celebrity, the only celebrity of that century, practically speaking, outside of royalty. I mean, it reminds me very much of the story of Luther. In other words, that somehow the people felt we have a voice in that man. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because it presupposes a sense of what is true, of what is right and wrong. And they said, that guy is speaking the truth. That guy is giving voice to what we have been thinking about the established church. In the case of Luther, it would have been the Catholic Church, whatever. But I see huge parallels between the two of them along those lines, that somehow the people said, that's my guy.
Right. And there was a kind of that radical populist edge to what's going on with Whitfield, because, I mean, there was something sort of dangerous and unstable about what he was doing, because it was out of doors, it was without permission, it was appealing to, you know, to eventually probably three-quarters of the whole population of the seaboard colonies heard him speak. I mean, nobody has that kind of effect. And as you said, he's not just the first religious celebrity. I mean, in a way, he's the first modern celebrity of any kind,
yeah.
I mean, which is extraordinary to have that sort of role. But he's a revolutionary figure, I think, in his influence on the culture, and that prepares, I think, America in at least indirect ways for the coming of the revolution.
Yeah, I mean, I've made that case because it seems undeniable, at least in some ways. But I really do think that with Luther, it was very similar in the sense that he's kind of no one's ever seen anything like it before. A figure in whom the people find a voice, and who's speaking against the establishment for them. I mean, it's just it's a new thing in history, effectively. We're going to be right back. Final segment with Thomas Kidd.
On a rock and roll radio. And when a young girl doesn't have any friends, that's a really nice place to go.
University professors have been fired for their Christian views.
boys are taking awards away from girls because public schools are allowing boys to compete in girls' sports competitions. Bad laws are forcing creative professionals to create and express messages through their art that directly contradict their deeply held beliefs. Hey, folks, this is Eric Metaxas. You may not believe it, but these are actual freedoms being fought for in the courts by my friends at Alliance Defending Freedom. ADF fights these pivotal court battles for free, but they cannot do it without your help. Your tax-deductible gift of $100 will help Alliance Defending Freedom protect your freedom and the freedom of your children and grandchildren. Give securely by clicking the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at MetaxasTalk.com. That's the Alliance Defending Freedom banner at MetaxasTalk.com or call 800-556-2770. That's 800-556-2770. Please help Alliance Defending Freedom today.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. The attack is underway, and a Kurdish official says Turkey is targeting civilians in attack on Syrian soil. Correspondent Charles de Ledesma has more in this report.
A spokesman for the U.S.-backed Kurdish-led force in northern Syria says Turkish warplanes have started targeting civilian areas in northern Syria. Mustafa Bali of the Syrian Democratic Forces says the airstrikes have caused a huge panic among people of the region. Bali's tweet came shortly after Turkish President Erdogan announced that the Turkish offensive into northeast Syria had begun. Turkey has been massing troops for an attack against Kurdish fighters that Ankara considers a terror group. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And on Wall Street, stocks have been higher, the Dow up 222 points, and the NASDAQ ahead 94. This is SRN News.
Your family depends on your income, and something happened to you, what would happen to them? You need life insurance, and SelectQuote can help you get it at a price you can afford.
SelectQuote found Jacob, 40, who's in excellent health, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $19 a month.
Not in perfect health? Don't worry.
SelectQuote found Tanya, 40, who has type 2 diabetes, a 10-year, $500,000 policy for only $32 a month.
We shop companies like Protective, Prudential, American General, and others to find you the company with the best rates. Give your family the security they need at a price you can afford.
For your free quote, call 1-800-880-7474. That's 1-800-880-7474. Or go to selectquote.com. That's 1-800-880-7474.
SelectQuote. We shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policies at selectquote.com/commercials. Your premium could vary depending on your health, issue, and company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Hey, folks, it's Eric Metaxas Show. Talking to Thomas Kidd of Baylor University. The book is America's Religious History. And Thomas, we're going to steal one more segment after this one because there's so much to talk about on this subject. I want to talk about a little bit how Whitfield, in a way, came to be a celebrity, almost like a secular saint in America, so that Benedict Arnold, before he becomes the eponymous traitor, visits the tomb 5 years after the death of Whitfield and sort of takes a relic. I mean, tell us about that. I just love that story.
Right. And you know, we debate about what Whitfield would have thought about the revolution, but he dies 5 years before the fighting starts. And so we don't know for sure, but many of the patriots assumed that Whitfield would have been a patriot.
Well, he does sort of give assent to the Stamp Act. I mean, he's in Parliament, isn't he, when Franklin is there in 1765?
Yeah, when Franklin testifies on behalf of the colonies, Whitfield is there, which is an amazing scene.
And also he was so close to Franklin, really.
Yeah.
But the idea that he became, as I said, like a secular saint so that the people in the American cause for liberty looked to him, and he was an evangelist. He was not a political pamphleteer.
No, I mean, he would write pamphlets about and preach sermons with regard to war and that, you know, so he would comment on national British issues occasionally, but it was no mistaking that his primary message is you must be born again. And so it really is striking to think of how people naturally made that bridge, and it speaks at least to how well known that Whitfield was among Americans and how beloved he was, that he would be the figure that they would think of. And it wasn't just when they went down to his crypt and took bits of his clothing and passed them out to the troops in 1775, which is an unbelievable scene. I mean, and that they just make that association. But there were other pamphlets that claimed Whitfield for the Patriot cause and so forth. It was just a natural move for them to make.
Yeah, I mean, it's just mind-blowing to me when I read that, that here you have Benedict Arnold, again, a good guy at this point, making his way to Quebec and stopping in Newburyport to go to the grave and then opening the grave. We don't do that today, do we?
Well, a lot of people did it with Whitfield because it wasn't the last time that people opened the crypt and they even took bones and so forth and sent them to friends.
Is that wrong? Is that wrong to take a bone or two? I mean, the idea that you could do that, A, and B, that people did do that. And there's a little irony there, which I think you mentioned in your book on Whitfield, that it's a very Catholic thing to do, to take a relic. And Whitfield would have disapproved heartily of the idea.
Right.
But what about, the idea that Whitfield was himself pretty outspokenly anti-Catholic?
In that way, he's very typical of his time. I mean, you look at people like Jonathan Edwards, other leaders of the Great Awakening.
Yeah.
They're sort of conventionally anti-Catholic, and that just comes out of the centuries of war especially between Britain and France. They just grew up with that, and so they saw the military power of France, Spain, Rome as being the great threat to true religion. And I think war tends to breed that sort of mentality.
Right.
And so they could say some pretty hair-raising things about Catholics.
And did. And that's the end of our hour together. But we're going to keep you here with us for another segment, folks. Stick around. I want to encourage you once again and beg you if necessary. Okay, I'm begging. The Alliance Defending Freedom. These folks are heroes. They do what they do. But they cannot do it without your help. They need you to step up. Go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com. Give generously. If you want to know how you can help the country, I promise you, if you give to the Alliance Defending Freedom, you're helping the country. It's very important. Our website is MetaxasTalk.com. And they need your help.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.